This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under J&B Reed. My first series collection is out. The first three books of The Storm Below are gathered in one amazing bundle. When Ari and Shailene are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, the demonic storm riders starting all they hold dear. Today, I'm joined by Alan J. Hess. He is the children's book author of the four-book comic book series The Adventures of Captain Polo.
So how are you doing today, Alan?
Hi, James. Very well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. So you're down in Ecuador.
Yes, I am. That's right. Right on the equator.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what is the weather like on the equator today?
Well, it's technically the rainy season. So it's overcast. It's overcast. But it's, you know, it comes and goes during the day. It can be sunny. It can be cloudy. It's a sort of a bipolar system, rainy season or dry season. So right now we're in the rainy season.
Okay. Yeah. So, what side of, is it on the Pacific side or the Atlantic side?
Pacific Ecuador. Side. Pacific.
Okay. Yeah. So so it's like a La Nina year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause I'm on the West Coast. And so we get affected. Yeah. That determines if we have like a cold winter or a wet winter.
Right.
Or it doesn't get cold. We're having a very mild, wet winter where it's really not getting below 50 here.
Right. Yeah. No. You're right. It's El Niño, La Niña oscillation. They determine a lot of what we get. Yeah.
Yeah. When it's that off here, we get really cold winters and it sucks.
Yes.
No one up here is ready for it because it's like every 4 years or something like that. It seems.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. So. I do always like to start these interviews out with a fun question or two. I'm just curious, what is your favorite color?
Oh, it's funny you should ask. I was wondering, I've been asked that lately by my kids. And I think I would choose a sort of like a gray-blue color. Like the color of the ocean, on the deep ocean, a gray-blue color, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just trying to stay away from primary colors.
Oh, trying to be different. Most people go with the primaries. I just say blue. Because...
I'm just trying to be different.
All right. And what is your favorite season there in Ecuador? You said there's the rainy season, the dry season. Which one do you like?
I think actually I prefer the rainy season because I live in the Andes. And it can get very dry in the dry season, like parched. And it's a problem, like, you know, the shortage of water. And the rainy season, it's just coincides with the Christmas season. And I like my Christmases cold. I want them to be cold. I'm desperate for winter. Having lived most of my life in the tropics, I desperately want winter. And the closest I can get to it here is the rainy season. So I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, the west side of the Andes is fairly dry, isn't it? Especially when you go farther south.
Exactly. Very, very dry. Yeah, desert, actually.
Yeah, because you're in the rain shadow of the moisture coming off the Atlantic side.
That's it, yeah.
So, how long have you wanted to be a comic book writer?
Well, you know, I've been drawing cartoons just for fun since I was a kid. But I never really took it seriously. And I started using cartoons as such to illustrate more technical publications in my work as a conservation biologist. I've had to produce bulletins and all kinds of communication materials. And around about 2020, around about year 2000, actually, so it's already quite a long time ago, around about year 2000, I realized I could use those cartoons for a purpose other than just for fun. So I started building them into these communication materials in my regular job, you know, my regular conservation work. And that led, one thing led to another. And I started drawing comics around 10 years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago, maybe 13 years ago. But I never really did it full time or took it seriously until very recently, in 2018. 2018, I actually decided to go full time with it, and I actually went as far as quit my job, and went out on a limb to.
Oh yeah. Finish.
Yeah. I had to make that decision. It was very scary because I was dragging my feet with this comic book, my big sort of opus magnum comic book about climate change, which I had started 2 years before, and I was just, it was just so hard to get it finished with a full-time job and domestics at home and everything. And I was in a position with my job where I wasn't very happy with it anymore anyway. And it coincided with a move to Ecuador from where I was living before with my family. And so I decided to quit that job and just finish the damn book, you know. and that's what I did. And since then, I consider myself now a full-time author.
Awesome. Yeah, it's I remember when I made the jump, when I ditched my day job to write full-time. I was because, you know, I was getting paid like royalties, and I was doing this like ghostwriting stuff, but like you don't get paid right away necessarily. No. So there's like this lag. And so I was like, I had just enough savings to get to like when I would start getting money.
Yes.
Hopefully that was the plan. And I could have probably like not quit my job then, but I just couldn't take it any longer. I said, all right, I think I have enough money to make it. So let's just do it. And
that's right.
I barely made it. And then it was all good after that.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah, I can't say I've made it yet, to be perfectly honest with you, but I'm working on it. And I have every confidence that my persistence will be rewarded. But it did take that jump, you know. And I also kind of believe in telling the universe things, you know, asking the universe for showing the powers that be. So I think by quitting my job, I made a very clear statement to whoever was listening that you better make this book thing work, because I just quit my job. So it's kind of like full commitment, which I know is a practice I hear a lot of from highly successful people who have really made a full commitment to something, and you know that it's paid off. So that's kind of like the idea.
Yeah, like if you know you want to be like, you know, rather successful at something, you gotta put a lot of effort into it, whether that's it's right. Writing or drawing a comic book, like any sort of the creative arts. It's like,
that's right.
I think people who don't do it just sort of think like you just sort of like. Just like spending an afternoon doing something, and it's sort of like a magical process, and they don't really understand that it's a lot of blood and sweat and tears and a lot of effort goes into any sort of art that's of any quality.
A lot of effort to create it, and then a lot of effort afterwards as well, right? To me, that's the hardest part, actually.
That is the worst. It's because it's a different mindset from like the creative mindset to the marketing business mindset. Yeah,
totally.
It's a hurdle. It's like my mind doesn't work that way with like data analysis and SEO. It all bores me.
Oh,
so
well,
much.
What a nightmare. SEO. I know. I keep getting these. I subscribe to so many newsletters, and one of them is an SEO guru. You know. And I keep getting these tips on how to improve my SEO for my website. But it's just a whole science in itself, SEO. So I kind of don't go there. I don't have the headspace for that. There's a limit.
Yeah.
There's a limit, you know.
There's definitely a limit. So why don't we talk about your actual, you know, your comic book, The Adventures of Captain Polo.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Captain Polo and what it's about and what makes it so great?
Yeah, well, Captain Polo is a polar bear, but he's not just ordinary polar bear. He's an anthropomorphic polar bear. I won't go as far as saying he's a superhero, but he does a lot of really cool things. He does all the human activities. He walks bipedally. He speaks human languages. He uses cash. He can sail a boat. And, you know, the story of Captain Polo is a story of climate change. This is a non-fiction a nonfiction element that is the defining structure of my comic books. And it's always about environment, natural environment. And the series of the Captain Polo adventures is really focused on climate change, global warming, which I consider to be the most serious environmental, indeed, almost, yeah, existential crisis of our time. And so I decided to focus on that subject, which is huge. It's a lot more than just melting ice caps. It goes into all kinds of political, social, financial, even cultural aspects, way beyond just the ecological aspects. And so there's a lot of material there to cover, and I believe that everyone needs to know about it. And what better way to do that than through a fun comic book? So Captain Polo is a mix between Tintin, for those who know who Tintin is, and Paddington Bear. And he travels the world and meets all kinds of colorful characters, human and non-human, who teach him about their experience of global warming where they live, or ecosystem collapse, or whatever environmental issues they're facing, but also the solutions that already exist out there. So the book is a positive book. It's about solutions. It's about the future. It's not a book about problems. But I don't believe in dumbing things down. I believe that everyone should know what the problems are and also what the solutions are. And importantly, how everyone can get involved, right? So there is that nonfiction element, very strong. Everything I do is based on research. And that research ranges from looking at place locations on Google Images in order to draw them correctly, all the way to actually interviewing subject matter experts, like experts on climate change, conservation experts. Within my own network, as a conservation biologist, I do have access to these individuals. And a lot of them are kind enough to have a chat with me. And so I get a lot of my research from them firsthand. So, you know, that makes sure that what I'm saying is relevant and I'm not making anything up. So it's pretty sound technically and scientifically. And Captain Polo is this polar bear who, he at the end of the day, although he is so human in many ways, he's also a wild animal, you know. So he evolves. At the beginning of the book, he's just a polar bear who gets isolated from the Arctic because he's on a piece of ice that's melting. And during the book, he evolves. He becomes more and more knowledgeable about why his ice is melting and why the Arctic is in problems, his home. And he gets really mad with humans, but he's kind and he's generous and he's appreciative of all those victims of climate change who are also human communities around the world. People who depend on natural resources to make a living and who are being forced away from their homes. The islanders in the Pacific who are getting flooded out, for example. He meets all of these people and sympathizes with them and carries their message to the world. And so he is sympathetic to humans when he sees that humans are doing something about the problem. But anybody else, or if he does not, he has no patience for climate deniers or those who don't take it seriously enough. So there is that wild animal instinct in him. And at the end of the day, all he really wants to do is just catch a seal or two and have a good meal, right? And go back to his Arctic home. That's what he really wants at the end of the day. So he's a great character because everyone knows polar bears. And it's exciting to use that species. Plus, he's really easy for me to draw, which is actually something that's important for me. And the book is, yeah, it's educational, but it's also fun. He runs into all kinds of characters and adventures along the way. And there's a lot of humor in there. There's a lot of adventure. There's a lot of action. And so it's meant to be entertaining as well as educational.
Yeah, sounds good. So I'm curious about the creation aspect or the creation process. So, I mean, in actual, like, prose writing, we have a concept called, like, pantsing and plotting. Yes. And I mean, is, like, pantsing even possible when you're doing comics?
I don't know. To... I think so.
Because don't you have to do like a... Well, I can imagine you would do like very rough sort of sketches to lay out your panels and understand like how, you know, where they go and where, you know, where the text and speech bubbles and stuff like that.
That's right. I mean, that's the way I do it, right? I don't know. I think it's pretty... I guess it's possible to do a simple comic by pantsing, but that's not certainly what I do, because as you've just realized, there's a lot of research that goes into there. So I have to really... I'm a big plotter, so I really plot... I really plan it out. The planning process could take months, actually, because not only is it about the research, but it's also about what you just mentioned. When you're drawing a comic, you have to plan out what each frame is going to look like in terms of where the speech bubbles go and who speaks in what order. Because I've made, and all this I've learned completely on the cuff and by making a lot of awful mistakes along the years, you know. You can't have the first person speaking in the frame to the right of the second person speaking in the frame. It's got to be a left to right reading sequence within the frame,
right?
Which means
I read a lot of manga, which are they're Japanese, so they actually go the other way, but preserve them for the English translations to keep the artwork preserved. So I'm actually used. I find it weird reading English comics because it's backwards from what I'm used to reading manga. Wow,
that's unusual. Wow.
It's because Japanese reads They read we read left to right. They read right to left.
Right.
And so, and so that's how their books. You start their book at what we call the back of it, and you go the other way. You read the panels the opposite way you would for an English comic. But yeah,
Changes everything. Yeah. And then also there's the problem of the panel. I tend to draw a lot of detail in my panels, and all that detail can be lost if the speech bubbles are just slapped on top of it. So when I'm doing the artwork, I have to know where the bubble goes before I do the artwork, you see, because in terms of optimizing my time, why spend 3 hours drawing a detailed scene in a market if I know that market's going to get blotted out by a big speech bubble? And so I learned this the hard way, believe me. I have wasted a lot of time.
this is my philosophy on like fantasy world building. Where like you have to create an entire fictitious world that you have that the readers have no real reference to, and so you can get really lost in the weeds, you know, developing places and cultures and sites that your characters never go to, never reference, never. Right. So in the end, you put a lot of effort into it, and if you're doing it just for the world building, that's fine. But if you're doing it because you want to have a career writing fantasy, you know, you have to like understand where you should focus your world building efforts at. Get the important stuff done, the stuff that matters to the characters, the stuff that will come down in the story. And you can be very shallow on the other stuff, just like maybe name drop it from time to time, or have like kind of a rough idea of like the sort of culture or trade goods or something that could just add vibrancy to your world just by, you know, some casual references. And
it's a whole science, isn't it? There's a whole science to it when you think about it. Because you know, my first impression of fiction writing was, this is easy. I just have to make it up as I go along because it's all fiction, so who cares? But actually, I'm wrong. It's not that at all. You like you just said, you do have to plan it out. Even if it's to save, you know, optimize your own time.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of weird pitfalls. You're writing about a polar bear. I did a world that didn't have metal, and that ran into a lot of weird issues, things that I'd never even come up with, you know. Sometimes I would want to write something, I'd be like, well, they don't even have that, like, term. I'd have to be careful and, like, you know, like, what do we call them, like, colloquialisms?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
If they involve like stuff with metal, I can't really use them at all, you know.
That's right. Yeah. It's tricky.
Yeah, it was a lot of little things that kind of that I had to figure out. You know, thank God for Japanese carpentry that, you know, they have a long tradition of not using nails in their buildings.
Right.
So they're they had to figure out how to, you know, put together rather large wooden structures without the use of any sort of metal support, just through good craftsmanship and
amazing stuff.
So you you have four of the Captain Polo comics out?
Well, three are out, and one, the fourth one is the sequel I'm working on at this moment, and that will come out on 27th February.
Okay, so is it up for a pre-order on Amazon?
That's right. It's on pre-order right now. It's on pre-order.
Okay. Cool.
It's called Pole to Pole. It's again Captain Polo leaving his Arctic home in worse shape than ever, and again looking for food, you know, as polar bears actually do in real life. They migrate south looking for food. Except Captain Polo, being Captain Polo, he has a boat, a sailing boat, and he sets out looking for food on his sailing boat. But what he doesn't know is that he has a hidden stowaway, and that is a secondary character that I'm developing. And that stowaway will actually has his own agenda. It doesn't coincide with Captain Polo's agenda. And so it's a thread that runs through the entire book. And and the stowaway, whose identity I'm not going to reveal, he basically sabotages the navigation skills that Polo has, because this stowaway wants to go south, all the way south, to the South Pole. And Captain Polo, all he wants to do is just, you know, go south a little bit, maybe to northern Russia, pop into Siberia or so for a few days, come back with some food, and go back home to the Arctic, but that's not what happens. so it's another journey. This time it's down the Atlantic, and with all kinds of stops along the way, and adventures, and there's some new characters as well, and there's a villain. So this book is, I'm pushing the envelope a little bit more on the entertainment side this time. It's still got educational elements, of course, but I'm making more emphasis on the storytelling aspects this time. And so there's sequences that have nothing to do with the main nonfiction subject. They're just there for fun. They're just there to build up the story and make it exciting, you know?
Awesome.
So it's a bit of an experiment, to be honest. I have to just try these things to see what is the perfect fit.
Well, good luck with that. I hope it works out for you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And if you'd like to tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet and connect with you.
Yeah, sure. Many places. I'm on Facebook. I'm on basically all the social media channels, the main ones. But you know, my website is alanhesse.com, alanhesse.com. And that's probably the best place to start, because there you can get all the social media links and also links to the books, to all of my books, and my resources. I like to offer, whenever I can, I create some resources which are free to download. So there's a climate change board game, which I created based on the book, and that's free to download if you sign up for my newsletter. And it's pretty cool. I've tested the game in schools. And they've had fun with it. It's all laid out. It's all organized so that you download a PDF bundle, which consists of a printable A4 size sheets, and then you print out the game that way, and then you stick it all together on a piece of board or something to make an A0 size board game. So it's pretty good for schools, you know, in classrooms probably. Probably people who, you know, just people who are not teachers probably wouldn't download it. But I think teachers would definitely be able to use it in their classrooms. So that's one of the free resources.
Great. Well, it was really great talking with you, Alan.
Yeah, you too, James. You too. And I just hope we can do this again one day when I've got an update. Be good.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much.
You have yourself a good day. You're welcome.
Okay.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter @jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, fantastical worlds of the imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com or wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.